plate a potential nugget.
And you also talk about gamification as an approach, right? I guess it's a little related to the discussion we are having. But one of the nuances I found interesting was this notion of entering the magic circle. And you actually say that, very often organizations come up with these interesting things, but not many people enter the magic circle. So it doesn't really have the impact it's supposed to have. Could you talk a little bit about the way, the context in which you use the term magic circle here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say that this is something I learned about from my Wharton colleague, Ethan Mollick, who studied this and, you know, sat down to teach me about gamification when I was writing this chapter of the book, and knew I needed to learn a lot more. He explained the concept of the magic circle to me. And the idea is that in order for any game to work and to be fun, the players need to enter the magic circle. They need to basically accept the rules of the game, agree to abide by them, sort of suspend disbelief. So entering the magic circle in Monopoly, for instance, right, would mean that you aren't going to just steal money from the bank. You're going to follow the rules and only use the money you earn to play the game according to the rules of the game. And it's no fun if you don't enter the magic circle, if you don't sort of say, okay, I'll be bound by the rules, I'll play along with the game. You're not going to get any joy out of it. And what he found, interestingly, is that a lot of organizations try to gamify things that might not be fun for their employees in order to make them more enjoyable. But a lot of the time, this doesn't, or at least some of the time, this doesn't turn out so well. In one study he did a study with my other Wharton colleague, Nancy Rothbard, where they were trying to give salespeople a gamified bit of encouragement to achieve more at work, to, you know, sell more. And some got a gamification, I'll say, overlay on their daily job, and others didn't. So, like, you know, all of a sudden every sales call is scoring a layup, and there were graphics to go along with it. And the more you score, the more likely you are to earn a bottle of champagne, and there's a leaderboard. So it's all part of a game. What they found is this actually didn't improve employee performance, and it even sometimes seemed to backfire. It worked okay when employees entered the magic circle. So they surveyed employees and said, like, you know, did you find the game fun? Did you like understand the rules? Did you want to abide by them, and so on? People who were into it, they actually saw some benefits, but a lot of people weren't into it, and they saw some harm generated. So net-net, it wasn't much of a positive, because it was imposed from the top, and it wasn't helping people achieve things that they intrinsically wanted to achieve. So they didn't enter the magic circle. They didn't jump in and say, like, this is great, this is fun. I think the key point, there's a couple sort of key points. One, if a game isn't fun and it's a bit of an art to create one that is, it's not going to do anyone any good. And second, if it feels like, you know, forced fun or mandated fun from the top down, it's not going to be a way that helps you achieve more. If you are trying to achieve a goal and find a way to make it fun for yourself, or choose to use an app that gamifies goal achievement and that resonates with you when you enter the magic circle, it seems like there can be really big benefits, because then the fun resonates. But there's just a lot of boundary conditions, and it isn't, I think like a decade ago, there were a lot of management consultants saying, let's gamify everything and we can get people to be more productive. And then I think the research just hasn't borne out that promise, for this reason, that often people aren't bought in, and so it doesn't have the desired effects.
In my previous company, Egon Zehnder, I remember we had embarked on this thing called the Stepathlon Challenge, which calls itself the Movement for Movement. We as an office were divided up into teams of 5 across geographies, and we were given a pedometer tablet that would measure the number of steps we would take. And each one of us had to keep track of the total steps taken by each one of us and by the team. The objective for each one of us was to walk around 10,000 steps a day, and there were awards for individual performances and for team-level outcomes. To use Katie's language, it took a while for everybody to get into the rhythm and into the magic circle, as she says. Initially, someone said, well, I could just tie this device to my dog and clock the hours. Or someone else said, I could give it to my neighbor who runs 20 kilometers every day and clock my steps. There was another person who said, who's checking if I'm entering the right number? I could just falsify the data. After the initial back and forth, I think we all settled into an interesting dynamic where it turned out to be a lot of fun, and I'd like to believe that it really nudged a lot of us to adopt a more healthy lifestyle, and it did improve the interfunction and the intergeography communication significantly. I still remember that if I was in an airport like the Delhi or the Mumbai airport, and if I had some time to kill before the flight, I would just walk up and down the terminal rather than sitting in one place, just to clock some steps. And this was way after we'd finished the Stepathlon challenge, and that habit still remains. It's been 18 odd months since I took a flight, but the last time I did, I do remember walking up and down the terminal when I had time on my hands. These things do work, but I guess, like Katie says, a lot of work needs to happen to ensure that everybody finds it fun and chooses to enter the magic circle for this to make sense and to work. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.